dear friend. This is Whitney Doe inviting you to listen to Methodist Hour. We will hear the music of a contemporary praise song and a timely message from the Bible by John Wolfe. Stay with us and enjoy the next 14 minutes, won't you? Methodist Hour encourages evangelical Christianity as we reach around the world. Join with us in this song of contemporary praise. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. Sing along. Today's message is entitled, Get Up, Don't Be Afraid. Here is Methodist Hour speaker, the Reverend John Wolfe.
Thank you so much, Brother Witt. The gospel lesson is Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 8. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here, and if you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And while he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. And when the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Get up and do not be afraid. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. Amen. You know, 6 days is a long time to think about dying. 6 days is a long time to think about anything that's that scary. Matthew says that Jesus began to talk to his disciples about his death and his resurrection, and then there was a silence for 6 days. And when he told them about his death and resurrection, they had been healing the sick and feeding thousands of persons. In fact, there were 4,000 persons. Well, not exactly. Matthew says that there were 4,000 men, not counting women and children. And all they had were a few fish and 7 baskets of bread. Now the disciples actually passed out the bread and the fish. It was so incredible. They knew what had happened. They saw the miracle of feeding all those people with virtually nothing. Now, if you will just read the 16th chapter of Matthew, you'll read this story. That's the one about feeding the 5,000, the 4,000 plus everyone else. But almost in the same breath, Jesus began to talk to them about his death. For this lesson, Matthew 17, verses 1 through 8, all Brother Matthew can say is, 6 days later. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and his brother John with him, and they went up to a high mountain by themselves. Now, just think about the momentum of this story. A few fishermen, a tax collector, and some others go up from an ordinary routine of their lives of chasing around the countryside with his teacher, Carpenter, who can heal people of their illnesses, feed thousands of people with just a token amount of food, and can teach more about God than anyone had ever dreamed they could learn. And if you think of the human side of this, Jesus must have been such an incredible image before them. He was a hero, superhuman hero. He was the person who could both heal and teach. He did everything. It must have been a shock to hear Jesus begin to talk about his death and his resurrection. How in the world would they even begin to understand what he meant? After 5 years in seminary, I can tell you I have a hard time of understanding death and resurrection. I mean, don't you? I mean, it's easier to use the words than it is to understand the rich depth of its meaning. I think during those 6 days, there were a lot of conversations that we don't know anything about among the disciples with Jesus. Conversations about what was going to happen. Things like, what in the world are we going to do when you're gone? I have a hunch that Jesus could feel the anxiety among this tiny band of followers. Jesus doesn't play his favorites, you know. But he did have a few persons with whom he was very close. They were Peter and James and John. Did you notice that Jesus deliberately took these men with him by themselves, Matthew says, and they went up to a high mountain, this holy place. And what happens next is the key to every Christian life. We call it the transfiguration. There was a mysterious kind of experience in which Jesus became the very presence of God. It was so powerful that these three disciples were in utter awe. Then they heard the voice of God, and then they became just so afraid. I know it's hard to comprehend, but there's all sorts of scholarly discussions on the meaning here, and you and I don't have time to talk about that all through today. But stay with me just a minute. Matthew is teaching us the real heart of this lesson when he describes the response of Jesus that Jesus had with those disciples when they were face down on the ground and just scared out of their skin. Now, you may have missed it. I did the first time. But Matthew says, Jesus came and touched them, and then he said, "Get up, do not be afraid." Now, there are two or three things here that are very important. First, Jesus came and touched them. What Matthew describes is the same kind of touching that Jesus did when someone came to him to be healed of a disease. Think of it. Most of the time we read that people sought after Jesus so that they could go to touch him. Remember the woman in the crowd who touched Jesus, just the hem of his garment, and she was healed? But this is such a dramatic statement. Jesus was the one who went to the disciples and touched them in a very healing way. Now, the second thing is this. Jesus said, "Get up and do not be afraid." Get up and do not be afraid. The words "get up" are the same Aramaic words that Jesus uses when he says to someone who is dead, "Get up," and then he brings them back to life. Like the little girl in Matthew chapter 9. I think a way to say all this is that the disciples were, in fact, followers of this charismatic leader who could do more than anything they could comprehend. And they could not even imagine all that Jesus did. But they did not know the sacred and the holy dimension of their relationship with him. You see, up to now, it was all on a human level. In this transfiguration experience, though, they actually met God. I remember very early in my teens, I joined the Methodist Church there in Madera, Ohio, and I was, to the best of my understanding, a follower of Jesus. I loved the church. I made my commitment. I attended youth-related events and just did everything I knew. It was an important part of my life. When I was 16, I attended a youth conference at Lake Chautauqua in Findlay, Ohio. On that Saturday night, we had an outdoor worship service. It was a quiet service. A minister spoke, and we had time to sit together and visit and pray, and we were right there before a handmade log altar. Somewhere in the mix of the candlelight and the music, I discovered the sacred presence of Christ. Somehow I knew right then, more than anything else, that I was part of what it meant to be a Christian. I felt that there was a sacred other, an other who knew me and accepted me in the way that I had never experienced in my whole life. It was, in fact, on that night that I first felt the call to become a Methodist minister. You know, that call never, ever left me, and I have never been the same since. More than a decade ago, Judy and I attended an interdenominational worship gathering at Loyola University in New Orleans. And after the main speaking part of the gathering, there was a called praise gathering. It was a beautiful sight to be together and serving communion. It was a beautiful thing to see clergy from numerous denominations, including Catholic priests and nuns. And We're singing together and serving communion. And, well, after I'd been to the altar for communion, I was standing singing with scores of other people. I noticed that there was a man who had been at the altar a long time. A lot of people had gone up and returned and to sing with the rest of us. And I noticed, though, that he didn't move. He was still there. And so I moved a little closer, as a pastor might do, and I was sort of afraid something might be wrong. One of the Catholic nuns who had been singing and playing the guitar, well, she knelt down beside this older black man who had been at the altar so long, and I got even a little closer. When he looked up, I could see that he had been crying. But his face was just, well, I can hardly describe it. His face was as bright as if he had a spotlight on him. Now, I don't mean that he glowed in the dark like a luminous wristwatch or that his face was pale, but there was an incredible brightness in his face. And I heard her say to him, "Are you all right? Are you okay?" You know, you have to understand that this place was just jumping with singing and music and clapping hands, and there was a kind of rhythm to the music. But this little man was kneeling at the altar like he was in his own private sanctuary. Are you all right? She said. "Oh, yes," he said. "I've been a Christian since my childhood. And I believed in Jesus and all that." But he said, tonight I felt him with me when I took this communion. "I can't explain it," he said, "but I just want to stay here all night. It's such a holy feeling." Now, friends, what I'm trying to describe to you in these brief couple of minutes is that there's a moment in our lives when we keep drawing close that we can have that assurance that Wesley talked about, the assurance that Christ is with us. And I hope that you'll spend time in prayer and drawing close to Christ. He so wants to be close to you. And Whit and I and Judy will be praying that you have this time in your life when you're so absolutely sure that you just want to linger there, maybe to build a tent there, if you know what I mean. In the name of Christ, amen.
John Wolfe, I know you've got another message. Share your word with us now.
Thank you so much. You know, I guess I was about 12 years old, and I was walking home after school one day, and there was this long wooden fence that was so much fun to walk on and try to keep your balance. Now, I thought I was doing great. But the next thing I remembered was waking up on the ground. I had fallen off and was knocked out for probably 30 or 40 minutes. But in a few minutes, I couldn't even think where I was. Finally, I made it home and I was okay. But the reason I'm telling you this is that for so many folks, life throws a curve at us and all of a sudden, things happen that we never expected and we wake up not sure what to do next. I was thinking about those folks in Ukraine. You know, in one day, their whole lives became different. Fear, hunger, cold, and a very unsure, uncertain, scary future was all around them. And it's the same today. Now, I woke up in a few minutes and life was back to normal. But for so many, the changes stay the same, and we have to struggle with what will be our new normal. Now, you may have had that same thing happen to you. But the one thing I know that never changes, even though life circumstances do, is that God's love is for us and never changes. God's love is unconditional, and it's always on our side. You see, there's nothing that you and I can do to earn God's love, because if we could, then that means we can control God. However, God's love can and does change us. In the middle of all that's happening in the world today, I hope you will keep deep in your heart that His love is always the same, and it's always for us. Our website is MethodistHourInternational.com. MethodistHourInternational.com. The Lord be with you. Amen.
Let us urge you to attend your neighborhood United Methodist Church or the church of your choice, where you will be offered Christ and meaning and joy for your life. And now until next week, this is your producer and host, Whitney Doe, praying that the good news may always be yours, and may the Lord bless you and keep you.